Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 51 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Announcements this week. This was a really big
kind of like last week. It was a lot of, yeah, and I think we've said this a million times. Bear with me for a million and one. We simply cannot share, follow, list, discuss every single thing. And it's hitting the fan now in a very good way. We are not capable of discussing or mentioning every single news item.
You know, we have a limit.
Only a little baby podcast. Okay, that was like bad Cockney with Southern. Awful.
Well, what I was going to say is we're limited by, I mean, technically, I guess we could talk to our host about expanding our show, but we don't really want to go over 90 minutes. So that being said, we're going to do as much as we can to fill in, you know, the big announcements of the week. But we really just want to get to our discussion of the episode. But let's not discount the announcements, because this week was big.
The biggest news and the thing that Summer and I have been waiting for so we can make our own announcement, even though we've teased it to heck and back, is... Okay, that's a really bad drum roll on wood.
That being said, we got notice this week that Outlander has been renewed
for a second season. Oh, sorry.
Season 2! Second season?
I thought so.
We can do it. You're right, ready?
No, it's okay. We already did it. Stop.
Second season! We were renewed for our second season, so...
And the funny thing was, is it a big deal? Absolutely. Was it announced as a big fanfare? No. Someone private messaged me and said, oh, did you see this, by the way? On Friday morning, I was like, I wonder what this is. And I was like, no. I'm so shocked. I have to say, I'm not upset, but I'm a little shocked that Stars didn't announce this.
I know. The first announcement that I saw was with Entertainment Weekly. And then it rolled out. But it was a short one. And then Variety released one that had a lot more interviews in it. Little snippets of actual sound bites of what people were saying. So it kind of like slowly rolled out. So it wasn't, I thought the first place I would have seen it would have been on Stars, but it was not.
Stars did put up like a little picture on Instagram, I think it said, or maybe on Twitter about season 2. I mean, they did something, right?
Oh, they did stuff all day following that. But
yeah, I was just surprised, because it is the biggest announcement short of having the season here now. Come on, let's be honest. This is what we've wanted as fans, but we've needed as podcasters.
Oh my gosh.
To be able to, God forbid, if there were no season 2.
Right.
Or if they waited to like, oh my goodness, what, January to announce or something like that. We would definitely continue the podcast at least through the end of season 1.
Right.
We've already committed to that. But there is this big hiatus, and we want to make sure, and don't get me wrong, we were already planning on it in case they hadn't announced it. Behind the scenes, on our own, we were going to start doing the read-along during just before the hiatus started, or definitely during the hiatus, if not before. And then just make sure we started playing the episodes during the hiatus. Because the books, we all know this, the books don't get shorter. And so we need to make sure we're happy to have the series, but we don't have the total of 16 weeks. We're basically missing out for a read-along. So we have to shove them in a lot shorter amount of time.
Well, and we looked at it. I think Dragonfly and Amber is, I believe, 49 chapters.
I think so.
So we're... Obviously, we're going to have to double up our chapters to make it fit, because we've lost 16 weeks to the read-along, and it's almost a year's worth of weeks in chapters.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're obviously going to have to condense it and put stuff together, but we'll work all that out.
We're not worried. I mean,
you guys just get your book out, dust it off, get it ready.
And be ready, because we will have a super fantabulous giveaway again just before we start it. It'll be probably, my guess is, before the hiatus.
Probably. We got to ramp up to it.
Oh, well, we'll have to, because it's definitely related to our read-along of DIA. Best news ever, season 2. We're so happy.
I mean, I won't say ever, because they could have said Stars greenlights the rest of the series.
Or 1 through 10, or 2 through 10, or 8.
Stars agrees to greenlight anything Diana writes ever.
Well, not
that would
ever,
be the most the amazing.
Books. The big
That
books.
Would be the most amazing.
We got a some, few, yeah.
We few, got some
a few
new photos.
Instagram, and we may even not even... go over them all, because no longer is it the odd Monday Friday.
No, because
it's so many now.
It is, but it's it's not just the Monday Friday anymore, because what they're doing is they're building buzz for the new episode. So we're getting screenshots from each episode.
So basically, there were definitely more than four, but we captured four of the Instagram pictures from Outlander Stars.
Yeah,
we Instagram got account.
A shot from the hall with Jamie. And you know what strikes me about, and I don't know if I say this again later, but what strikes me about the photos and everything that we get out in the seasons that we're seeing, or this in the season that we're seeing, is how well this show is lit. Like, it's,
oh my gosh,
the lighting is amazing.
A lot of it, and Ron said in that little snippet somewhere in one of the things before the series even started, that Scotland just had this has this magnificent light, and that's outdoors. But when you bring it indoors and go to the studio and everything, it is what they do is just as amazing as what Scotland offers.
And they picked a cast of people that look amazing in candlelight.
Oh, well. Almost everyone looks amazing in candlelight.
We got, obviously, they had their season two announcement in a photo. It's got a really nice shot of Jamie and Claire
looking at each other,
with season two hashtag Outlander on the front of it. We got a shot of Blackjack on his horse.
Well, I would say Tobias dressed up, because this is an off take.
Well, he's smiling, so it can't be Blackjack, because nobody's leading.
Well, we haven't seen a shot or a scene of when Randall is smiling yet. He may do so in a very chilling way.
Like
we don't know yet.
No one's bleeding. Ugh, and we got this lovely shot of Katrina in this
Some kind of a furred hood. I think it's faux fur.
I think it is faux fur, but the gloves she has on, they've got, like, looks like it's a
beautiful
stag.
Yes.
Oh, they're so... Oh, and she just looks so pretty in this picture. Like, again, kudos to costume and lighting, because everyone looks so beautiful.
Oh, I love it. And then we had, of course, the best news. Or, well, the best news was season two. I'm not going to lie. But great, great news on basically the specs of... Or the specs. The breakdown, numbers-wise.
Viewership.
Release of episode one a week early was viewed by millions of people. And the cool thing was, and I'm not sure if this includes the week early, but at least for the night of viewership on the premiere evening on the 9th, it was an amazing breakdown of male-female. It was 51 female and 45 male, and then 4% that...
Dogs?
No. That was my cats. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, what?
No,
what else is there?
The people who declined to mention? Something like that,
I guess.
But whatever, still, even if...
No, I think that's way more of a male viewership than I expected.
Oh, it is amazing. I hope it continues.
Well, and knowing the books as well as we do, they should enjoy it. This is a book that anyone can enjoy, male or female. That, I mean, it's a story that's universal that I think anyone could enjoy. It's got something for everybody. So that being said, knowing that about it, it's still hard sometimes to talk dudes into watching it because you're like, it's a female lead.
Well, we talked to a few dudes today about it, so.
And I have personally
cool.
talked more than a few dudes into reading it.
Yes, you have. Summer is a good little
book pimp.
Okay, and then it's not really an announcement, but it is pretty darn cool. Now, Canada has its own release date.
They do, but.
And it's later this month,
They do. But what I will say about this one that's interesting is that it's not available in the United States this way yet. But iTunes in Canada is allowing you to purchase your season ahead of time. And I think that has to do with who is showing it. I think it's a showcase thing. It's a showcase?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in the U.S., Stars would have to release it.
But I don't know if they're going to. But I think they should.
Oh, they want viewership, and we get it. But they still make money through iTunes. You know,
of course.
If someone gives a season pass or a subscription, it's still money. So I still obviously encourage anyone and everyone to get Stars. But in the U.S., but this is really, really, really good news. And I think it's a great move by iTunes Canada or Showcase. And any other country or every other country where this is debuting, I really, you know, if you listen to this podcast at all, you know, this is a great way to give it to people. Because so many people in the last 10 years since the recession and everything, so many people have downsized as far as cut the cord and gotten rid of cable.
Yeah. But that being said, I think that, you know, Stars, if you're listening, you should really look into offering your services outside of premium cable. Like,
In addition to.
Like,
it's
another
income
stream.
Exactly.
To offer that as a side thing where maybe you just do it like a Hulu, where you pay a monthly fee and then you have access to all the programming.
Yeah. Who knows if they'll get back with Netflix like they did before. It would be cool if you could get
Starz Play without having to subscribe through your premium cable. It'd be nice if you could just subscribe directly to Starz through Starz Play. That would be a fantastic feature.
We've already mentioned this. I'm not sure on the podcast. I know we've tweeted and Facebooked about it. I may have blogged about it too, but they definitely, another mention of it, and so we're happy to mention it again, Knockout Licensing is, the headline is, Knockout Licensing to Develop Product Portfolio for Outlander. And this is nothing new. We've already heard this, but it's the fact that there's another article being written about it. It was on licensing.biz. is exciting because it means, not just is it still the case, but it's still on the radar, and it's still coming in. We want people to know as well that these things are coming, whatever these things may be.
I want more tchotchkes. I mean, I'm enjoying I'm enjoying looking at the ones that are available through the current Outlander store. But if there's going to be an entire other segment of tchotchkes, I'm down.
So then we have the introduction or the continuation or the expansion of these Outlander screenings. So even before Outlander premiered in Australia, Soho TV AU, the channel or the network that is carrying Outlander in Australia, had screenings this past week. I believe it was on the 12th, but it was in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. And I think, I mean, that's amazing. I'm so glad that they are sharing photos of these amazing events. And of course, there's the picture of all the people in the theater. And then there are individual pictures, people with their pocket jammies, people in front of the big poster. And
it's sweeping the world, you guys. It's sweeping.
Yeah. And we knew this, but
I know, seeing but it, you
is
know,
even, seeing it with regular thing. People is best.
I know. We've been talking about this for almost a year.
Almost too long.
Yeah. For almost a year, we've been talking about this and how this is going to be big. It's going to be big. And to have it
finally
follow through on what we've been promising.
Well, we haven't been promising, but we've been following and chatting about it so much.
Well, I feel like I've been making a personal promise to our listeners.
Well, to our friends, maybe. Okay, onward. We just heard that it was, a week ago? That it was picked up in Netherlands and all throughout Scandinavia. It just debuted in the Netherlands this past Monday. Fast. I've never heard it be so fast. But it shows you how quickly, and I understand it has to do with their lineups and how easily they can shove something in there. But this is amazing.
Well, not only that, but you have to understand that as far as the news stations are concerned, the stuff's already there. It's already packaged. All they have to do is plug it in. Not like us, where we got it announced on Starz, but they weren't even filming it yet. So, I mean, they won't nearly have the weight that we had. It's just a matter of picking it up and plugging it in now at this point, I think. We got a new newsletter this week from Outlander. This one is all about Dune Castle becoming Castle Leoch. Mm-hmm. And it talks a lot about, you know, what's already there. And what's so neat about it is, I'm sure most of you have listened to Ron's podcast at this point, but they talk about how they have this beautiful castle that is still standing and in existence, and they had to go in and then make it a ruin with CG.
CGI. The brother of CG.
Yeah. And just how they built it. And I think it's so neat how they made it they made it seamlessly flow from the actual outside exteriors that they had to the stuff they built on their sets.
I think you've said it all. The newsletter is all about Castle Leoch, basically, which ties in very well to episode 2 of the same name.
Yes.
And also, the first podcast for episode 1 talks a little bit about this. Does he talk a little bit about it? Even though episode 1 is not about this, he mentions it a little bit, I think.
He did.
I'm sure
episode
2 will be much.
He mentioned it briefly in episode 1 because she and Frank visit.
Yeah, that's
and he talked about, you know, making it a ruin. This, you know, existing, well-preserved castle. There was an epic Q&A on Twitter. Between Sam Heughan and pretty much everyone.
Everyone who tried.
And I think, we don't have time to go through everything that was said, but it has been posted. Outlander TV News has a transcript that they've posted that we'll link to on our page. But the thing that I took away from it is that Sam is a giant flirt. I've enjoyed every instant of it, but every time a new post would come up, I'd be like, sweet Lord, he is working it. Somebody asked him if he knew how to knit, and he was like, will you teach me?
Well, hey, like, he's trying to be interactive.
Hey, he succeeded. That was very interactive. But I did read all of those with a big smile on my face. So the costumer, Terry Dresbach, mm-hmm. has a blog up. I don't know. Has it been a blog the whole time or is it a new blog?
No, it's been a blog for a number of months.
Okay.
If not more than a number of months. But it's not always, it's not weekly or anything. It may be much more so now that the show has started. But she, of course, has access to anything and everything she could possibly ever want. She's posted some of her sketches. Mm-hmm. She's posted, you know, some pictures of the cast in their costumes. It's just amazing. And so we would urge you all to please check out Terry Dresbach's blog. It's at her site, terrydresbach.com. And the blog is actually entitled An 18th Century Life. Just gorgeous. Outstanding.
Well, and when they announced Dragonfly and Amber,
mm-hmm.
she posted a sketch of,
oh my gosh,
of a beautiful like French design. And I saw
gave
that
me
and I
shivers
was like,
for
oh,
season
I'm
two.
So excited.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, please check it out because, I mean, this season's going to be bonkers and awesome enough, but once we get to season two, her blog is going to be the place to be. I mean, everything Outlander is going to be the place to be, but she's even said a number of times before, of course, while she's a huge fan, she said, I believe, that season two would be probably one of the most difficult simply because of the ornateness of the French court costumes that will be needed then.
Well, not only that, but and I'm not spoiling or anything, but they're everywhere in season two. So they not only have to capture the splendor and opulence of the French court, but they also have to go back and be in grimy, gritty Scotland in the middle of Culloden.
For parts of the book, yes. So yeah, we look forward to that. And I think last but not least,
we have a listener line.
Yes, we do. And we've had it for quite a little while.
We've
kind of forgot about it.
Technically had this phone line for a long time. But honestly, I don't even know the number. And if Ginger hadn't reminded me today, I didn't even know that we had it.
And so that actually reminds me, we need to record a new contact us at the end.
Oh, because we do.
May not make it this week. But the number is?
The number is 916-604-4777. And the reason behind releasing this is that I know a lot of people have expressed interest in perhaps, you know, recording stuff, and they try to go to Audioboo and figure out how to do it, but not everyone can figure that out. But I know everyone knows how to use
and
a telephone.
One of our plans, yes, that's true. One of our plans is that we still really, really, really like the use of Audioboo, and we still encourage it.
Oh, for
this
sure.
This is just another avenue for you to be able to contact us. And this is not just for leaving comments about an episode so that we may or may not share it on the air. As a matter of fact, please do let us know if you do want us to share, or more especially, if you do not want us to share. But this is our general feedback line. Feedback about the show, feedback about a certain podcast episode, feedback about
Outlander stars. I think if they've taken the time to record something, it's a given that it's allowed to be on the show.
That's true.
Why bother?
And then you can always, you know, email us. So it's just another avenue.
It is.
Another way.
But, you know, we'd love to have you call and or leave us a boo because we like hearing your lovely voices.
We like the boos, too. Leave us a boo or a message. Oh, and just may have been assumed, but just to be clear, that our number is not, quote unquote, manned. It's a place to leave a message only.
Please join us. Please call in. Please be a part of our show.
And now I think it's time for our discussion of episode two.
Episode two. And on to our discussion of episode two.
Yes, we're very excited. This is Castle Leah, written by Ron Moore, and also directed again by
John Dahl, because they did it in blocks, remember?
Yes, and the blocks is a
two-episode block.
Two episodes. Uh-huh.
So this week we went back, I think, to what they're going to continue with, which is they're opening with the opening credits.
So this episode two, begins where the other one left off. Nothing is off camera. It's all here, or at least it's all shown. They arrive, actually already arrived at Leah.
But now they've gone into the castle, into the gates.
Into the courtyard, or whatever it is, yeah. So they arrive at Leah, and shortly after they arrive, old Alec comes out. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but this just puts me right into the stables.
Right, but what was so funny about old Alec is he literally shows up and starts berating Rupert.
Yes. And then, of course, Mrs. Fitz comes out and hugs Rupert. And I'm thinking, did we miss something? Is it just because he's part of the household? We know she's related to someone who will be coming up soon. That will be revealed. But is she related to Rupert? Who knows?
I don't know. He was the closest to her when she came out. No, in the scene.
Ah, I see. And then, however, of course, another comment is not just the comment, but also by her actions. Myrta stinks. Still.
Myrta stinks, but if you've noticed, Myrta's last name is also Fitzgibbons.
Yes.
So I wonder if they are related.
Well, Mrs. Fitz means Mrs. She was married at some point, mm-hmm. and that may be touched upon. It's in the books, but it may or may not be touched upon it later in the series, much later. And Jamie says of Claire to Mrs. Fitz, Myrta found her, and Dougal said we must bring her along with us. And I'm thinking, found her like she was some pebble on the side of the road.
But, I mean, that's kind of what he did.
It is true. They brought her along.
But I think it's so funny that as soon as he says, Dougal said to bring her, so we brought her. And she just kind of goes, okay then.
Okay,
she's like, there's nothing else to be said.
That's all I need to hear.
There's nothing else that I need to hear.
And Claire points out, they're getting ready to take her in or to go in. And she's like, we need to get you dressed. And Claire points out, look, Jamie was hurt and shot, and she insists that it be tended to it right then at that moment.
Well, it's funny because she kind of starts talking about it, and she's like, well, we need to disinfect it. It's going to make him get an infection. You know, it could get red and whatever. And she goes, oh, I know what you mean. But you mean to tell me you know what to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like almost like a pressure test.
And she asks her, after she says that basically he needs to be tended to, Mrs. Fitz asks her, are you a charmer? Are you a beaten? And this is the first we hear of beaten. And I wrote in my notes, in all caps, they kept it. Because they don't have to keep the whole beaten thing. They could have changed the name. It doesn't really matter because that doesn't affect too much. But it's just, whenever you hear, as they said, they're going to keep things that are like a nod to book fans. And this is just something that, I don't know, just makes me happy. And the name Beaton you do hear later in the episode and maybe later on.
Well, it makes sense, nice. Though, to keep it because it does come up again. It comes up numerous times.
Yeah, I'm just saying they could have changed the name. And
no, they could have, but why bother? Like, why change it? It's already there.
So as Mrs. Fitz is taking Claire into the castle.
I love that line when she says, we'll get you dressed in something more.
Well, something more.
More.
As she goes through the hallway, she is having a flashback, or we see a flashback at least, of her walking through the same hall with Frank. And then comes a scene that is very, I can't think of the right word. It's a huge scene in the books. It's the first time that they're, I think, really alone together. And it's when, it's the first time we see them, well, interacting alone. And once Mrs. Fitz leaves them, then Claire starts to doctor him, and she sees his back for the first time.
Did you think it was weird that they closed the door when she left? And she left these two unmarried people alone with the door closed?
I was going to say no, but the fact that Claire was basically in her underwear and then about to make him half naked to enable her to tend to him, I would have said probably not, because it's a doctory kind of thing, but the fact that she was basically in her underwear, a little bit odd, maybe.
Well, it was a doctory thing, but
she was in her underwear.
She was in her underwear, but also women were not...
Well, left with... But she was a married woman, not known that she's a widow yet.
She is an unknown woman at this point.
Unknown, but married, not virginal, and 16.
Correct.
So she sees his back for the first time.
We all see his back for the first time.
And there's another little look when he says the name Randall.
Mm.
She stops and looks up. And he's describing being flogged twice in the space of a week. And she drops her cloth and calls herself clumsy. And then we see, as he's telling her about it, we see his flashback. The first time he was flogged at Lallybroch. When we see Tobias, it's just as we had seen in the first episode. We see him with an entirely different posture, entirely different look about him as Randall. What did you think about the... Because we never really see... We read about this scene. They made some slight changes to the scene. What did you think about it?
I mean, they made some changes. I didn't think that So far, what I will say for Ron Moore is I don't think that the changes that he's made have been super, have been huge.
No.
They've been little nuanced changes. And yes, like they changed the location of the flogging. Yes, honestly, I don't, and I know we just read this, but I don't remember that he ripped her blouse completely open.
He didn't.
Okay.
That was one of the, that was one of the changes. This change was, he basically...
We'll call this the Spartacus change.
The biggest change, or the biggest changes, I think, the biggest two changes of the flogging scene, or of this Lallybroch scene, would be the fact that, not that there's a skirmish, because obviously that already happened, but the fact that in the books, it is, and this is a slight spoiler if you have not read, or if you're walking into this blind. In the books, the exposing of Jenny's breasts, it happens in this incident, but it doesn't happen outside.
Definitely. It doesn't happen
right
now.
It does happen by Randall,
yes.
But Jamie is not around. And also, the place of the first flogging was not at Lallybroch. So, again, we're not saying it's bad, it's good, it's just we notice it and we can't help it, and that's totally fine. And this, as Summer has said, the changes thus far, and quite frankly, I think we'll be fine with any change because we know he's doing his utmost. One of my notes was I thought this was a very interesting change and maybe a very good one, because to bare Jenny's breasts to the soldiers and to her brother and make her brother watch,
yeah,
was incredibly shaming.
No, and I think...
Both of them.
I know, but I think that they're in... Not in a hurry, but they're quickly trying to establish exactly how awful this man is.
Yes.
And they're making him do his utmost to show his truest, darkest character. Maybe even darker than he was written in the book, but they're trying to get that whole coloring of that character set in the beginning.
And one of the things I... And perhaps just... flat out incorrectly envisioned in my mind, and probably because when we've read the floggings did not happen here at Lallybroch, so maybe that's why I had a different image in my mind. I had in my mind Jamie at a post, which she was at, is at, being flogged, and not necessarily necessarily a big bullwhip or anything, but I didn't think of Randall being so close to him. You know what I'm saying? I have no reason to back that up. Nothing to back it up.
Here's what I'm going to say about that. I think that when they changed the location of the first whipping, that he would have to whip him with what he had on hand, which was a horse whip. It wasn't like he was at a location where he just had a random whip lying around for whippings. He was a soldier on the move using what he had at hand. And what he had on hand was one that was a short crop.
And that all feeds very well into, as you said, building this portrait, or painting this portrait of Randall, because we got to do this on the fly, I'll use what I have. But what does that do? It puts him closer to Jamie physically, all up in not just Jenny's stuff literally, but now up in Jamie's stuff. They say that one of the most personal weapons you can use is a knife, right? As opposed to a gun where you shoot someone from very far away. That's not very personal. Whether it's hand-to-hand combat, whether, like, I'm thinking fists or a knife, it's very personal. This was not combat, obviously. This was torture, punishment, whatever. But he was right up there. And it is very... He's making it personal.
Of course
he is. He's making it personal.
But that's what he likes.
I understand that. But what I'm trying to say is it's another... Not a nail in the coffin, but it's another few brushstrokes in Ron Moore's painting of this man.
Yeah. Well, I just think they've only got 16 episodes to make this person really pop as being awful. So,
something I noticed, I don't think he did it early in. For some reason, I think it was twice, but I think in this episode we only saw it once, but I want to say we saw it in episode one, but we did not. But something that just made me laugh, because Tobias is so good. All the actors are, and everything, the setting, the actors, the costume, everything is so good that when something stands out, it just almost makes it extra funny, because everything else is so good. When Tobias, like, goes to put that gun in his belt, he can't just put it in his belt. He has to, like, make a huge movement and put his arm back and put it in his belt, because that pistol is so long. It's almost absurd. And he's so good and so straight and just, he goes with it and he probably practiced that. I wonder how many times he had to practice that because that was a long pistol. I bet
there's some outtakes.
There have to be outtakes because I can't believe there wouldn't be others around him laughing. Because seriously, you miss that and it is not going anywhere. I mean, it is so, it's not a small gun like we have these days. That just made me laugh. I'm like, this is, it's kind of ridiculous. I don't even know how, well, you got a waistband, you got to use it for something, but.
Well, I think that, and going back to the whipping scene is that they go, there's like the two extremes. First you have Jamie being forced to watch Jenny being dishonored, and then you have Jenny being forced to watch Jamie being brutalized. So
yeah, it's about shaming. And
well, it's a power struggle, and it's them showing them that they have nothing. That is they what, cannot
and that's what Jamie says,
stand against them.
And that's what Jamie says to Claire, that the whole point of Randall's point was to show them, or tell them, that this is what happens when you disobey the English. It's all about...
It's power.
It is definitely about power.
Everything with Randall is power, honestly.
We still... we've seen it before. I think this... I think, well, in this episode, because it's so early on, this is the first time we see it. In this episode, we see more glimpses of Jamie's humor. He describes how he woke up, and he was on a cart with chickens, and Claire says, talking about the entire ordeal, not the chickens. Claire says, it must have been terrible for you. And he answers, oh, chickens are very poor company.
It's true, and what I will say is about the writers is they've really... You can tell they love these books because really captured these characters so well.
And the actors have taken lines that could be delivered rather cheesily and have... Because they're iconic for fans.
Mm-hmm.
And have done it in such a professional, authentic way for the character.
But what always struck me when I was watching these episodes... And I've only seen two. But these episodes is how well Sam has captured Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of those little character nuances that we, I say we, but I'll just say I, that I felt when I read them, all the little, the humor, the aggressiveness, the manliness, all of those things wrapped up into one character, and he's got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably going to say that every episode.
So back to the scene with Jamie and Claire, and he does the best Jamie smirk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the best. He does the Jamie smirk. We're not having a competition or anything. And when he tells her she has a good touch and her husband is a lucky man, she's kind of snapped back to reality. She's like, because right now she's kind of in his world, talking about his experience and
it's
all of that.
It's not even that she's in his world. She's focused on what she's doing, which is caring for him and being a nurse. And that's kind of taken her full priority. But the second he kind of mentions Frank, and not mm-hmm. by name, obviously, but the second he mentions Frank,
her husband, yeah,
it reminds her. She's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
And we knew, we've said this a number of times, well, we didn't know, we thought very strongly that there would be flashbacks, not even flashbacks, there would be views from the 20th century time of parallel, if you will, when he was looking for her. And I mean, very expected, but appreciated. And Katrina does a really good job in everything, but in this scene. And something I thought that was funny was when he goes to console her, he's kind of beside her, behind her, and then they turn and she ends up on his lap. But then at some point, they're looking into each other's eyes, and boom, she stands up and kind of goes away. And in the book, remember, she makes an observation that he was not a little affected.
Correct.
And I'm thinking, there's nothing here to tell that except that she shot like grease lightning off of his lap. And I'm wondering if that's kind of a shout out to the book fans. Either she's just, oh my gosh, we're too close right now. It's too uncomfortable. I'm a married woman.
It's good because he goes in and he hugs her and she clutches at him. And then they have that not even cliched, just that like... That moment. You know, the moment that
she falls down getting off of him. So I'm really wondering, this would be interesting to see what Ron says, or to see what the background of that is, what the motivation for. Was it just that she was too caught in that moment and then checked herself? Like, oh crap, what am I doing? Sitting on this young man's lap? Or was it like the book? She's just like, okay, time to go.
But I love that they put that line in. from the books about the
You need to be scared. Oh yeah, I'm glad they kept it.
They have to. I mean, you know, it's like I know as a logical human being, logical minded human being that not everything can stay, but the things that they've left in have been such a joy so far.
Yes. And again, it's not just a joy because we recognize them and I don't expect them. We hope for many things and then recognize them when they're there, but that they're not corny and cheeseball. You know what I'm saying?
Because the book isn't corny and cheeseball.
I don't think the book is corny and cheeseball. But if you keep something in something like this just for the fans, like a certain line or a certain whatever, just for the purpose of keeping it in, you know what I'm saying? It may not work with the flow of something. It has, depending on delivery, depending on the scene, I'm just saying, there's always a possibility for cheeseball.
But that's something that you can attribute to the skill of the writers being able
to work it in.
To work it in a way that is seamless.
The writers, absolutely, but also the actors. Because they can give the best, like, you know, couch everything in the perfect scene, but the actors, obviously, the meat comes from the writers. But the actors have to give that performance.
I agree with you, but on this kind of a shoot, it's not the kind of film or project where the actors are free to ad lib. So I think that while yes, it is the skill of the actor, it is also to deliver, but they have to be given the material to deliver.
That's what I said. They need the meat and potatoes. The material comes from the writers, but the actors can be given wonderful material if their verbal delivery of that is cheesy. It will not help.
No,
that's what I'm saying. But this is, as we've said in many times, this is the best of every single part of any kind of production. Not that we've been privy to 800 million productions, but this has just every side, every facet is just, it's amazing. The next morning, Claire's in a bed, I guess, with curtains on both sides, because Mrs. Fitz opens two sets of curtains, unless one of them is the window.
A bed? No. I think it's one of those beds that has curtains on all the sides.
Yeah, I think so.
All the way around. I want one. Do they sell those?
And I do not know. I think you can have one made. And she gives her some broth, and I thought it was funny. I watched it a few times to make sure I was right. She gets like two mouthfuls of this broth, and then she's like, okay, time to go. And I'm like, that's not very kind. And also, Claire's hair
was amazing. I love how awful her hair is.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's amazingly awful. I was like, it's the worst bedhead or horse head. I don't know what you want to call it. Riding a horse for 48 hours head? I mean, I love it. I'm glad they went there because it's awful.
Now it's realistic.
It is realistic.
As a curly-haired person.
Oh, that. I'm not even thinking about the frizz. I'm thinking about just...
I know, just all of it.
It's like all up in the air.
You have no control over what happens to your hair when it's curly and wet.
And when you're sleeping. That's the thing.
And she went to bed with wet hair.
And then Mrs. Fitz helps her get dressed. And I, you know, it was funny, the exchange about the corset. That was funny. But is it just me? I mean, I love the costume. The costuming? That's not the question. But those shoes, they weren't the kind of thing you want to write home to them about.
They were not cute. I'm sure they were very period, but
very
they were
period
not cute.
And maybe not easy to make by a cobbler.
I felt so bad for Katrina, though, when she was stripping down in front of Mrs. Fitz, because she kind of was just like, oh.
Cover this.
Don't look at me.
And as it has been described before, for her to get dressed is like 87 layers.
Oh, for sure. And which would be nice if it's really cold and drizzly out in Scotland. I'd like 80 layers.
Not 87, just 80?
Just 80.
Okay.
I like round numbers.
One of the touches that I liked when they got to Colin's office was the birds.
Well, of course they had to leave the birds in.
Again, they didn't have to. This is something that, you know what I'm saying? It's the small touches that make it, because maybe in the books it's not. I guess the difference is in the books you have all this description, right? And here we don't have her voiceover. Now, it's not important that we know what the birds represent or whatever, and that may or may not come up later. But if you were a reader and you recognize and you remember the birds and you hear them chirping in the background, it's just like, the birds!
Well, the first thing I noticed in this next scene, other than the birds...
The birds!
...was she walked into the room... She walks in the room and the first thing that I noticed...
Oh, it's Colum's feet.
Hang on. No, not his feet. Hang on. Go back. The first thing I notice when she enters the room is this is the first time you can see her whole dress, top to bottom. And what I noticed is that it was quite obvious that this was someone else's dress.
Oh, was it too short?
It was way too short. Oh. Like, it was...
I didn't look at
it
that.
It was, like, 2 to 3 inches well, too that, short in the front.
Then I think that's a good choice, because it's too...
Well,
because
she's
funny.
Really tall for the time.
Well, she is, but when she was getting her dress, I was like, how convenient is that this all fits?
Exactly.
So, well, okay, it at least makes sense if it's a short, thin-ish girl. So,
well, I mean, here's the thing. With most of these period dresses, for the most part, the skirts just, there's not really a belt. It's just, like, the fabric, and it ties. There's, like, sort of a tie that ties. So, and the thing that needs to fit, the corset is adjustable. So, basically, you just get a shirt that fits, put it underneath, adjust the corset. The corset covers everything else on top, and then you just need the skirt to stay on. Now, the only things you're going to notice, for the most part, is if the skirt's too short.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your sleeves are really, really long. But most of it can be covered up.
But the skirt is literally only from the waist down, right?
Yes.
So, the shirt, the arm, the sleeves were separate. Is this what you said? The only thing that really matters that cannot be adjusted too much is the shirt. So the shirt was the one thing that had to kind of fit, right?
No, the corset, the thing is like the sleeves. I mean, obviously everything that you have on there, you'd want to somewhat fit. But it's like the sleeves tie on and you notice that they don't look like they fit 100%. Like there's larger gaps
because
in the
even,
sleeves.
Okay, you have the corset on over the shift.
Yes.
But over the corset is the shirt or the bodice. That still has a tie. So even that can be tightened? Or just...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's all adjustable.
That's pretty nice.
Well,
if you're having one of your little, like...
But it's convenient, though. Remember we talked...
Bloated days?
I know. But remember when we talked to Diane...
Oh, yeah.
Earlier, she talked about, you know, how expensive and how...
Oh, the clothing.
And how much clothing took.
Yes.
And so when you make clothing, A, you're going to make it so that it lasts. Which means that when you're done and you can't wear this anymore, somebody else is going to have to wear this.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to turn it into something else. Because you just can't waste good cloth. And I think that this is obviously someone else's dress. They don't just randomly have dress hanging around for guests. But I did notice how much shorter it was in the front.
That's a good observation. I did not notice that. So something else that we notice is that the date, November 1st, 1743, which is what? The day after Halloween is All Saints Day.
Yes. And I also notice how awful.
Although this day may not have been the first.
No.
She just sees the writing, and that's the first.
But seriously, how awful Colum's legs are.
Oh, yeah. But something funny, okay? Speaking of something that I made a joke about last time. When Colum walks in, and he says, I'm not going to try an accent, but when he says, I see you've met some of my friends, he sounds Russian. And then later on, I think they did a great job, by the way, with the CGI.
Legs.
I know. And then later on, he's talking about the books. He says, some old comrades. And I'm like, wait, he sounds Russian. He's saying the word comrade. What is going on here? No, he is Russian. No, I'm just kidding. He's a Russian Colum. But yeah, that was the legs very, very, done very well.
Like, painfully well. Like,
yeah.
It hurt me to look at them. Like, it looked so painful.
It looked to me almost like as if it's going to sound odd. You know how horses are incredibly gorgeous, but they have the skinniest, most graceful legs? It's like if a human, a decent-sized human, had the skinniest, maybe not so graceful, but the skinniest legs, plus the bow, the bowing.
Well, I almost thought they were going to, like, move like
snap.
Chicken legs.
Oh,
no, like chicken legs where they bend forward.
Do people get to lose their track these days?
You don't hear about it often, do you?
Is it?
I don't think I've heard about it since Toulouse-Lautrec.
Well, you mean Moulin Rouge?
Well,
that too.
But even that, in the Moulin Rouge movie, they just had him being short. Like, they didn't...
Oh, yeah.
They just had him on his knees. They didn't do anything like this.
No, but I'm curious if people still... I'm going to say still get it, because it's not contractible.
We should Google that.
We should Google that, okay.
Dear Google.
So, okay, I Googled Toulouse-Lautrec syndrome, and it is also known medically as Pycno or Pycno, depending on your choice. Pycnodysostosis or Pycno, pretty much dysostosis, or probably Pycnodysostosis. Anyway, it's, as Claire said, a disease of the connective tissue, bone and connective tissue.
And this is where the first interrogation really starts.
And she has a flashback. I was like, I guess it's still a flashback, but she has a memory, a thought of what some information Frank had told her about undergoing interrogation, to stick to the truth as much as you can and only change those details that absolutely must be protected.
Well, I think the bottom line with interrogation, and I'm not a super big experienced person with interrogation, I should say. But the closer you can stick to the truth,
the less you have to
remember. The less you have to remember, because the bigger your lie becomes, the harder it is to
keep. And I think that's the crux of it. When they're talking about her near rape at the hands of Randall, mm-hmm. it's almost like he doesn't say she's wrong, but it's almost like he's like, what, you mean Randall, an officer of the crown, would do this, blah, 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 to a woman? I'm like, is he trying to imply or insinuate that Randall would not? It was just a very interesting kind of line. It was just interesting. But then Claire kind of brings the conversation back to her travel arrangements, and this is another change from the books, if I'm not mistaken, right? That she has the opportunity, supposedly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
To leave.
No, because if I'm not mistaken, in the books, they talk about how the season is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
That it wasn't safe for travel, so she'd have to stay until the weather was clear enough to travel over.
Well, it was May. That's going into summer, which is pretty good travel. But maybe, I don't know.
There's something about the time of the season.
Maybe they just didn't have a lot of people coming, travelers coming through. Basically, the conversation ends with, there's someone coming through in about 5 days, and a lot of times there can be, they'll have room for one extra person. And then she goes out to either the roof or some landing, and here Ron Moore gets in his "the past is an alien world" theme with the line, "it was like landing on an alien world you'd only glimpsed through a telescope." Claire sees people playing below, people milling about, and she sees a young boy playing with Dougal. She knows of Dougal now. And she kind of gets a smile on her face, and I wrote this line down too. "Then you begin to wonder if maybe life on this alien world is not so different after all." And so, like Battlestar Galactica had an underlying theme, like many shows, stories have an underlying theme. We know that Outlander, Diana will say, has said many times, it had its Christ allegory moments. Jamie was a Christ figure in many ways throughout the book. I'm seeing this definitely as a theme, because look at Ron Moore's background of Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, different, definitely completely different worlds, but the alien aspect of, in some way, whether it was actual physical, you know, Martian aliens, whatever you want to call them, or a different planet, a different location. And here it actually, it's all human, but it's in the past. That's our alien landscape.
And this scene is the first time we see our unspoken character of the series in Scotland. Because she walks out on that like exterior like walkway, very high perched,
mm-hmm.
and you see all of the like.
Yeah, I would say during the actual series, yes, it's all over the credits or the title, but that's the opening. But yeah, as far as landscape, yeah. So when it comes to time to go to dinner, I thought, okay, fine, I can finally distinguish more easily and at a quicker glance between Angus and Myrta, because Angus is like having his bangs back in a ponytail. That's what it looks like. And he's more talkative too, but that's what I can see now. Basically, this entire scene, Colm plies Claire with drink, and food, and more drink, and more drink, and more drink.
Well, she makes the mistake of assuming the interrogation was over.
Exactly, because now that she had plans to leave, that she would be okay for the next few days.
Well, because he kind of, it's another tactic. It's like, make them comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I've told you're leaving, we're going to get you out of here.
Now just enjoy a meal with us.
Right, and tell us all about yourself.
And as he's plying her with food and drink, he grills her in a very kind of, I would say kind way, in a very methodical of work it into the situation way.
He's gentle about it, but he's still pointed.
He has, absolutely. And he asks her about her name, at one point then, well, a lot of questions, but about her name and then where her family, extended family is from, etc., in France. And Claire asks about a Mr. McTavish, and Letitia says, "Who?" So we get another glimpse into the outlaw that is Jamie, so we don't know yet what his real name is.
You know, we didn't see a lot of Letitia. We didn't have a lot of Letitia experiences in the book.
Yeah.
So for me, I thought it was interesting for them to play her as casually as they did. For some reason, her tossing the bannock to Claire was a very casual...
That's true.
...casual thing. And maybe in this, you know, hierarchy of Castle Leok, they don't have, you know, we hold ourselves above because we are the Lord and Lady. But I thought that was a very casual, very, very casual thing to do.
Throw something at Claire. Not, like, at her face, but kind of toss it to
like,
her.
And I know I've said this several, said this word, like, 40 times, but it was so casual, like something you would do to somebody you already knew.
They are plying her with more, I mean, it's amazing. The first time I saw this, I was like, man, obviously, well, not obviously, I'm guessing she's not drinking all of this alcohol. It must be non-alcoholic, but who knows? But the point I'm trying to make is, if it were alcohol, man, she's got some kind of tolerance because it just goes on.
She does, though.
And that... she does, that's true.
In
Claire
the books,
does.
They go on about her having
But the
tolerance.
Rhenish, I mean, ooh, that Rhenish is beautiful. It's kind of pink, a light pink. Didn't Colm and Dougal kind of have a mini stare down about where... She asks about where Jamie is, Mr. McTavish, and Dougal said he's in the stable, and Colm was... He didn't say anything, but they kind of looked at each other. And then he said something then, and then Dougal said, oh, if you want to basically make up your own
This is full of stare downs between the two of them.
Yeah.
And that's...
It tells about their relationship.
Right, because Dougal, while he is, you know, the legs and, you know, the brawn of the two of them, you know...
And another piece.
Yes, which we'll get to later. While he is that, he generally doesn't work on his own. And you can see that he also, he's like, I made these decisions... And then he goes, but if that's not what you want, we'll fix it. You know, we'll change it. So that's, you know, really indicative of the two characters. But he did that same pointed look when she said she was going to be... And it comes later when she tells Dougal that she's going to be leaving soon. That Colm said that she could leave with that tinker. And he's like, oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she surely, to escape having to talk, was drinking a lot of that wine.
And then... Here comes Hamish, the young boy. He's very, very cute, very sweet looking.
Cute.
And Claire mentions that she had seen him playing with, she says, his father. And then we learn that is incorrect because there's something interesting going on behind the scenes. Readers will know what's up here, but newcomers may not. Hamish says he is the son and heir. And I wrote A-I-R. Maybe who? He is the son and heir of Colm McKenzie. And his mother, Letitia, says, indeed you are. And he goes up to sit next to his mom. But Rupert and Angus are also giving each other annoying glances. It's like, come on, some major faux pas was just made. I mean, and then, which, you know. Claire is like, you know what? I think I'm going to take a rain check on the rest of this Rhenish. She claims tiredness, which I would too. And she probably is, and drunk. Mm-hmm. And just is like, you know what? I need to get out of here. And remembers... that she has to be careful in the future because of what she now recognizes as...
Further interrogation.
Exactly.
I think that the use of the flashback was a lot better in this episode. Mostly because they weren't flashing back to scenes that had just happened.
The next day, we don't know if it's the next day. It could be 2 days later because she has 5 days to play with here. But sometime later, but before she leaves, she is taking a picnic out to... and bandages to change...
Who would discuss the fact that she's like, oh, you missed breakfast? And she's like, oh, no, here, have some. And the porridge literally doesn't
move.
It's like
a block. Or it's a little...
No, it's like a sphere. A complete and total sphere of porridge.
Okay, so then she's able to get some stuff. They don't show us how, but she gets a picnic basket with some food and bandages, whatever she needs to go change Jamie's bandages. And she takes it out to the stable. And she finds pretty quickly that she has a companion, an unwelcome follower. And
stalker.
She notices... Yeah, a stalker. There you go. And it's Rupert.
He fatly stalks her.
And she meets Jamie actually at a pen, not quite in the stable yet. And he's working with a horse, and he's speaking Gaelic to it. And I know that we're not reading a book. This is the actual series, which we love. But I'm wondering if somehow they'll work in that line as a voiceover, because there's no other way it could be except a voiceover if it's kept. And that is, if he were a horse, I'd let him ride me anywhere. I wonder, because that is iconic. To me, that's almost more iconic than need not be scared to me. I mean, the horse thing is like, it's pretty appreciated.
It is definitely a memorable line. I will give you that. However, I don't.
It would be okay.
I would be weird as a voiceover. I'd be okay.
No, it would be awkward as a voiceover.
I feel like she could totally portray that line
with her looks,
with an expression.
With her face. So basically, yes, I agree. She meets Jamie at a pen. He's working with a horse. He's speaking Gaelic to it. And she accidentally knocks a lock or some kind of metal thing off and makes a noise, scares the horse, almost gets Jamie trampled. He writes himself, and I was like, I wrote down, my goodness, it's kind of sexy the way he ducks and comes up. I mean, that's so silly, but yeah. So something that I don't think I mentioned earlier is that when they first come to Leok and they go straight into, she does his, tends his wounds, sees his back and all of that, and then she starts to cry about her husband and he pulls her into his lap, or he's first consoling, comforting her. He's saying, shh. He's kind of comforting her with his arms, or with himself and with his words. And one thing that it sounded like he said, and I listened to this about 5 times, it is so quiet. My computer, I had it on the highest volume I could, and I had to quickly turn it down so I didn't blow my ears out when they started, you know, having louder conversation. But he was whispering it to her, you know, telling her these things or saying some things to her. And one of the first things he said, it sounded like he said, was "grai," and we know that means love. And he says, it looks, sounds like he's saying it here too, with at the when he's with the horses to her, but it could be a total miscue. I could be mishearing it, but when he's with her in the room, it totally sounds like he's telling her, or using the Gaelic word. Grai. And my pronunciation is probably wrong, but it is the word for love. But anyway, so I just thought that was an interesting, I could be wrong, but it did sound like it, and I listened to it a few times. So when he says the line, it's just a girl with spirit is all. I mean, the way he says it, he's a good actor, we know this, but the way he says it, just the lilt in his voice is just so endearing. It's that melodic. I love the melody of all the Highlanders, but of course, especially of him. We learn from their discussion in the stable, what do we learn? That there's a price on his head, 10 pounds for murder.
Now, she caught on really quickly that his name was not McTavish.
Yes, that is true.
In the series. That took her...
not too long.
Much longer. I don't think she found out for sure until the wedding.
Oh, in the book?
Yeah.
And we also find out, because he's telling her, he hasn't told her his name yet, but he's also telling her basically these details. And so she does know he's an outlaw, and she's like, you could have lied to me, you didn't have to tell me, and he says he trusts her. But then old Alec comes in, he kind of gets after Jamie to go do such and such, and then she's about to go back to the castle, and Jamie, she basically says, you know, don't get beaten or stabbed, or shot or stabbed, or something like that, and he's like, no promises.
Flogged, I believe, is one of the things.
Oh, flogged, yes, flogged or stabbed.
And he says no promises.
So once she leaves the stable, she confronts her
stalker,
Rupert. He's just funny as always. And so apparently, according to Rupert, Angus is a drunk and a committer of bestiality. She goes back to the castle and she confronts Dougal, right? She runs into him and then she confronts him. And I wrote down the words brass tacks.
Well, she says, what do you think? What do you
Why
think
you have
I am?
Me followed?
Why are you
What's
me
going
followed?
On?
What exactly is going through your head? Who do you think I am? And he's like, I'll tell you what I think you are. I think you're a spy, basically. I think you're an English spy, and I don't think that we're safe here with you.
And she's like, well, you know, it's nice to know you. I'll be out of your hair, not in your hair since you don't have any hair. I'll be out of your hair in 5 days. And he's like, what? And she
you don't know if
this was a mistake to tell him this.
It was obviously a mistake, because the second she tells him, you know he goes to call him and says,
we need to not let her go.
I don't think she's who she says she is. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's safe to let her go. She knows too much about us.
Or
we
something.
Need to keep her here till we figure it out.
So Claire basically sets about knocking out the next 5 days. She just wants to put on a happy face and get through it. I really like the scene. I wouldn't say a garden, but when she's picking mushrooms.
Well, it's like she gets back to the earth, and that's what she's comfortable with, and it's nice to see her back in her element.
Well, that's not what I meant. I meant with Galus. I liked their interaction. I liked the way that we're introduced to Galus. We've read, I think, or we've heard on Twitter, but I know we've read it somewhere that Galus is the most changed character.
She's an odd duck.
She's an odd duck anyway. She's very mysterious in the books, but that definitely comes across very, very well. And I like how they're introducing us to her. I like how she has like almost fairy type features, you know, very kind of otherworldly features.
They shot her in such a way that she is ethereal.
If that's the word.
Like, she glows. Like, she, and I know she's speaking as one pale person to another. She...
translucent. She's gorgeous and pale and...
Like, glimmering, like, shining from within. Like, they did... I don't know if it's... And I would say that makeup had something to do with it, but having been close to her on the red carpet, she was equally as ethereal in person.
And I thought... I mentioned this many, many, many episodes ago that I was curious how she would do with the Scottish accent. I thought she did a very admirable job. I think she has the melody down. This is from a non-native speaker of Scots.
Like, so the cadence?
The melody of the Highland lilt, the Highland melody of it. How it sounds overall and the up and down of the line. But I think she got more of the melody than the actual accent. But enough of the accent and pretty much all of the melody to make it more than believable. And I love the way she answers the question, are you a witch? Hardly. I mean, that's... And then a little giggle after she says, I'm aware of how wood betony can transform toads into pigeons. And a very tiny giggle. She is understated, and I think it definitely helps. It's just... It's a gentle, mysterious, ethereal introduction to this very mysterious creature.
Even she is playing with the is she, isn't she?
Of course she is.
And she's
having fun with it.
Yeah.
And one of the very last thing, I didn't write down the words, but she almost sounds Irish some of the time. So then we come to the hall. And, of course, people who are, I would say below him, but people of the community are bringing forth their disputes to, and Colm is giving judgment and meeting out punishment, etc. And Galus and Claire are standing in the crowd. Galus is interpreting for Claire. And this is obviously we haven't seen more than two episodes, but this is so far, except for the little bits that between Galus and Claire, this whole thing is in Gaelic, which is awesome. And I wonder how many more opportunities we're going to get that have so much Gaelic at one time. You know what I mean? Because this is the country, the people of the land. This is their place and their first language many times was Gaelic.
I bet this was a super busy day for Otto.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. So as I said, lots of Gaelic. And then finally we see Nell Hudson. Leary is brought in with her father. And Mrs. Fitz kind of comes in on the side of the room. And
it was a nice touch because when I read the books, I myself forget that they are connected in any way. So I think that by bringing her out and showing her so quickly, you know, showing the shot of Nell and the shot of Mrs. Fitz, I think that they're establishing the relationship between the two of them early on, which is good for the casual viewer.
And Leary's father accuses her of loose behavior and wants her punished. And Jamie, of course, speaks up. And Claire is astounded that he would offer to take any kind of beating or anything. Maybe not the fact that he would want to be chivalrous, but the fact that he would be chivalrous in this manner when he's still extremely injured. And he goes up there, and then surprise, surprise...
I just love how he swaggers up. Like, not only that he's agreeing to do it, but, like, the look on his face, like, I'm totally doing this. This is going to be awesome.
He's offering.
Right, but it's just, like, he's got that look on his face, like, he's actually looking forward to it. Like, he knows he's injured. He's about to get the crap kicked out of him, or beaten out of him. And he's smiling.
So the biggest surprise for me, well, we knew early on that Angus Moore's character was totally changing.
Well, they made him a very tiny, skinny man.
But a much... Well, no, I know, okay. Having gone further with my own rereads, since we finished Outlander. In Dragonfly, toward the end, when certain things are going on, you're reminded how close Angus is to Colm. Angus is like Colm's right-hand man. And that is true in the book. I just don't think it's played up as much. Here, it's really played up, and he's given a protective role, but he's definitely given a much bigger role. So I think the biggest surprise for me during the beating scene is that it's Rupert giving it. Again, it doesn't really, no, it doesn't change the story much at all. Overall, it doesn't matter. But it was just interesting because we're so used to Angus, and he's supposed to be this big, huge hulk of a man. And we knew he was not going to be from pretty much early days, I think still in 2013. And it's interesting that it was Rupert.
I agree. But like I said, because they cast someone so lean and small as Angus Vore, because in the books, Angus Vore was a large, like, tree trunk
a big
man.
Dude, yeah.
So they needed someone who could be, like, the executioner, if you will, to show up and be, like, the big dude to, that
but what
meets
we don't, I don't disagree. Punishment. I don't disagree that was the choice, perhaps, why they chose Rupert. But I don't think the reason they didn't have Angus do it was because he was small. What I'm saying is, I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. Did they purposely hire someone who was, quote-unquote, smaller because they wanted that look for Angus because it didn't matter because he wasn't going to be doing the beating? Whether or not they changed the character, or did they change the character, hire the guy, realize it wasn't plausible, you know, believable to have him beating this big Jamie dude, and thus write the scene for Rupert. That's all. It doesn't matter either way.
I mean,
it's
they didn't have to write anything. All they had to do was the day of be like...
They wrote in that he hit him. That's all I'm saying, the character. Another interesting, weird thing, which I to me actually goes well into her character, but it's a little bit worrisome, so maybe that should be a signal for us, is Claire, understandably so, is watching this with horror because this person whom she... I wouldn't even say she has feelings yet or anything, but this person that she's helping doctor...
Well, it's her patient.
That I think is the relationship right now. This person that she cares for, that she is caring for in a doctorly way, right, as her patient, I don't think she's stitched him up yet, but she has doctored him up almost daily, multiple times likely each day, since the moment she met him. And here he is willingly going in to get hurt. And something else I didn't know, I watched this a few times, and the last time I finally realized, Rupert full-on punches him in the shoulder.
You didn't notice that the first time,
I did not notice
though?
That. I thought, what an a-hole. That was
no,
not nice.
No, and, well, the thing is,
oh,
Rupert is very connected to Dougal this entire scene. He keeps
looking the eyeballs.
To him.
I know.
For basically guidance of, you really want me to
keep
do that?
Going,
can I stop yet? This
yeah.
is really awful. I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he looks to him and Dougal gives him the nod.
Like a blink or something, yeah.
And then he goes in and punches him right in his, like, gunshot wound, which I thought was, like, a total dick move.
A total douchebag move, yes.
Yes. So that happens, and you just see Jamie's face just basically go, like, white with, like, agony.
But during this whole thing, when Claire is, like, understandably, like, what is he doing? You know, she still can't believe he offered himself up for this. And she's probably suffering a little bit, feeling for him. She's like, oh, number one, she feels bad. Number two, it's like, man, what am I going to have to doctor up now, right? But the whole time, Galus is not smiling with a big, huge grin, but she's watching like she reminds me of, I don't want to say a cat, because she's not messing with her prey, but she reminds me of maybe the way she kind of looks and has a tiny bit of a small, small smirk and cocks her head a tiny bit, but almost bird-like. She's detached. She's very, to me, that's almost more of a Claire thing, right? Claire is the caring, empathic healer. Galus is a healer in another way, right? She's an herbalist. She knows all of the stuff about supposedly how to treat different things and bring on conditions and do this and do that. But she's definitely more removed. She's not as caring and as empathic, I believe, at least thus far, as Claire. And what does she say when Claire's freaking out and says, but he's still injured? Galus does not move her eyes away from the spectacle. She goes, mm-hmm. Almost with an inner smile. And that is creepy.
Well, she almost, and she's, okay, she's, because she didn't make this whole thing happen, so I'm not saying she is a puppet master, but she's, she reminds me of those people that like stirring stuff up and then sitting back and watching.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's almost like a study of the human condition.
Also, without giving any spoilers away, knowing Galus's origins, that's all I'm going to say, and seeing her in this situation right now, and knowing of her husband, which whom we'll meet later, this might be the best entertainment in the last month. Right?
No, for sure.
So I think the safe way to put it. So Murta had said to Jaime that his uncle was up to something, and the looks exchanged between Jaime and Dougal. So during the beating, it's between like Rupert and Dougal, giving a yes or a nod or an eye glance to like keep going or stop or whatever. And then afterwards, it's between Jaime and Dougal, and Jamie's like, there's communication going on there big time.
No. But I don't know about you, but I was totally relieved when Dougal finally gave the nod that he could, yeah, like,
no kidding,
punch him in the face. I'm like, not going to lie, though. After he punches him in the shoulder, Jaime looks a little less uncertain about the fate of this fight.
Only reason that he got knocked down was because he was more injured at that point. Once he's done and he has permission to stop beating him, Jaime gets up and Murta's with him, and Claire's like, okay, it's time for me to go in. And Galus is like, no, I'll take you. Let's go back way. It's quicker and will cause less gossip. So
won't draw attention to her.
Yes. So,
and he finishes his beating with a bow.
Like he's trying to show honor or something. Well, he has, but ooh.
Well, it's definitely much more of an honor to choose fists over being, you know, spanked in public.
And as he leaves, Leary is in the arms of Mrs. Fitz and looks over at Jaime leaving. And I wrote, dun, dun, dun. Because that, what he just did for her, think about it. Without giving up anything, 16-year-old, about to get a beating or something, who knows what it would have been. Someone, a young person in your family area, who's single, who's not ugly, comes and takes a punishment for you? I mean,
We all know that that's how that would make her feel.
Yeah.
That, you know, oh, he must like me.
Or something, yeah.
But how that appears to literally everyone else in the room.
I always forget about the other 100 people
because
there.
Because you're like, her father's accused her of loose behavior. And some dude's like, I'll take her punishment. He's like, loose behavior? I want in on that.
Oh, wow. Oh, so now you're, this, I never thought about that before. So now he's like, oh, we know this is not Jaime.
No.
He's thinking, but now, no, that makes me think, okay, huh. If I go in and take this punishment for her, homegirl will not only think I love her, I may get me some after the fact.
There may be some reciprocation.
If she's a loose girl, then there would be.
Right.
So Claire doctors him, and she says something like, you know, you're going to need to change those over the next 2 days. I'll be leaving. And she just seems so happy with herself. And then as she's saying this, Leary's around the corner, and she's like, yeah, I think someone else wants to talk to you in private.
And this is also, Mrs. Fitz does state.
Oh, yeah.
This is her granddaughter.
Yeah.
She's in the courtyard.
She's getting ready to go. I think she's even hauled her stuff up on the cart. She's getting ready to go.
Stuff there. Miss Fitz gives her a basket with food in it. Like, she's all prepped.
Dougal shows up and says, yeah, himself wants to talk to you. And he takes her into the surgery. And we find out it's the surgery. And, of course, there are flashbacks to herself and Frank in that same room. And Colm is there.
Well, Dougal walks out of the shadows like the enforcer. You know what I mean?
He's the enforcer.
I know, but it's his role.
And Colm is there, and he asks her another question about Beaton, a clan Beaton, healers. And he mentions that their last healer was named Davy Beaton from clan Beaton, and he died of a fever within a week. But since Davy is gone, Colm says,
well, the joke is that the Beatons are known for their healing throughout the land, and they didn't get a very good Beaton because he didn't last very long.
And so since they are now without a Beaton, they need a new Beaton, and she's going to be their Beaton.
So we find out about the Beaton after Jaime got his Beaton.
Pretty much. So he basically says he's not going to let her leave.
No, he says, you'll stay here as my guest.
And she's, he says, like, you'll be here guest, as my guest. And she's like, you mean prisoner. And he says, only if you try to leave. Oh, Colm. You do say the nicest things. And now this was, I didn't quite get it, because he doesn't say she's a prisoner. She's saying if she tries to leave, she'll become a prisoner. So they both close the door on her and the latch falls, but I don't think it's locked. I think it's just closed. But it's very ominous. She's down there, because you have to walk down some steps to get into the room. She's down there lower than they are. They are higher physically, elevation-wise, although probably just a few feet, than she is. The door closes and the latch comes down as... Of course, I mean, come on now, let's not joke about it. It's very symbolic of a prison. Yeah. Absolutely. And she looks and probably felt like a trapped animal, like in a hole almost.
Well, you hear a lot of people talk about, you know, gilded cages and things, you know, oh, they're in a really pretty place, and this bird has a really nice cage or whatever, but even if it's a gilded cage and it's a beautiful place to be, it's still a prison.
You like know,
it's
still the birds that Colin has in his office.
Right, if you can't leave... And you're forced to stay there.
Like Colm's spirit in his body.
Well,
it's getting a little too...
No, well, here's pokey now. Here's the only way that I can describe it. When I went to Hawaii, the last time I went to Hawaii, 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all the airports were shut down. And when I say that to people, they're like, oh,
lucky you.
You got stuck in Hawaii. And yeah. I was like, no, you don't understand. Being stuck anywhere instantly makes it less desirable to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that it was not beautiful there. It was beautiful there. But the fact that I could not physically leave and we were stuck on this albeit beautiful island was very frustrating to me that I had no options. And it was almost claustrophobic to not be able to
go,
to have a choice in the matter. So that's the only way that I can compare it to.
So I don't think we heard the Jamie and Claire theme.
Not
this
in this episode.
However, I did like the musical undertones, and they were actually there all throughout the episode, and back and forth, what I heard toward the end especially, back and forth between slightly major, if that can exist, and definitely some minor. So again, understated, they're not taking center stage at all, but in the background, but supporting. So I think we've wrapped up our discussion of episode 2.
So all in all, good episode. I think that we're moving along at a good pace.
I think so too. I think we're still, from what I've heard some critics say, it's about 3 episodes to set the scene, or the world, and then you get some more, much more character development, and it climaxes, at least the first climax, even though it's not one of the triangles of Diana's book.
Or one of the dirty climaxes.
It's not one of the...
Summer.
It's not one of Diana's 3 major climaxes in this book that she speaks of, but it's definitely a climax. It's a first mini-climax to bring about major effing change.
Oh my god, please stop saying climax.
Okay, it's a major high point climax.
Stop it!
For... events to change, and it's after that it's not, we're not spoiling anything by saying that they get married, because there's already an episode called The Wedding, number 7, so we're not going to talk about how it comes about, but let's just say in episode 6, Shiz hits the fan, the garrison commander, you can guess who that may be, someone who's brutal, we've already met, that's all I'm going to say, but something happens in number 6, and this is from critics, that they're saying it's a genius episode by itself, it's almost like a study of characters. And it's almost solely between, like, 2 people. And I can only imagine, I mean, we can probably guess what it is. We know in the book what happens. Apparently, the first 3 set the scene, and then we get much more development. And after number 6, it takes off like a shot. And it does. In the book, after...
But that's the same structure of the book.
Yes.
You know, it's like you kind of get this little lead on, and you reach a certain point, and it's all downhill from there, and it doesn't stop. I'm excited.
Oh, my gosh. It's... When can it be next Saturday, please? So I think that's it for our discussion for episode 2, Castle Leach.
So before we totally wrap this up, I do think we should touch briefly on the preview for the next episode.
Episode 3.
For episode 3.
Yes. A lot of nice little flashes were given, and definitely, again, no spoiling here, but definitely it seemed like some potentially major swinging ways from the book.
That would be...
Character-wise.
That definitely.
Not end effect-wise, but character-wise.
No. And for all of the book readers, you know exactly what moment we're talking about. Yeah. For those who are not book readers,
it starts with a W and rhymes with bitch. I can say that.
I was like,
what do you think I was?
I don't know.
Anyway, that, yes. And a certain character who said that word kind of freaks us out.
I want you to know that I was trying to make bitch rhyme with Fitz.
It wasn't.
I know, because at first that's what I thought you were trying to say.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, that's why I started to laugh, because I was like, wait, what? I got very nervous when it played, because...
Oh, me too.
I'm like, oh, this is the first... If this really happens, and it's not like a dream sequence, which it totally could be. It could be.
Diana's too smart. Would be, well, this is not Diana,
would,
though. This
I know, but it would be... That would be the first major deviation from plot.
Now, from arc plot...
No.
A plot arc? No. But a character doing something? Yes. And it would kind of break my heart because later on, this is from the book, we're not going to say exactly what it is, but a certain character, if this is true, if they truly change and it wasn't a dream or something, it would kind of break our hearts because in the book, this character was really touched by Claire and felt for her when a certain thing happened.
Well, and she was 100% on her side. Now, granted, yes. Now, granted, she could. This could be just a moment where she's like a freak out moment where she then has a change of heart, calm yes. back down, whatever. So all of that could happen. And we only, like I said, it's just a teaser trailer. So they do that on purpose to kind of titillate you and get you ready for the next episode. But Bravo stars, you titillated us. We're talking about it.
Whew. So I guess that's it.
Yes. Until next week.
We're a little bit nervous, but we're excited.
Nervous, excited.
So until next week, we hope you listen again. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night that my young love